No, that's fine. You know, we don't have a lot of people here yet, dude. So I was a little concerned.
Where is everybody?
Yep, we're good.
I'd like to call the Senate Committee on Higher Ed to order. This afternoon, we've got several bills. If you're ready, Senator Miller, we can start with your Senate file 504. Senator Miller, whenever you're ready.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair, and a few members that are here. This is interesting sitting down on this side of the table today. Madam Chair, members, today I'm here to present Senate File 504. It's basically a pretty straightforward bill. There's two parts of it. Section 1, it's a 10% reduction to the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities Central Office and Shared Services budget, and also a 10% reduction to administrative costs at the University of Minnesota. And members, as we're going through these difficult times in the economy, and as we're looking at the budget, and it's very clear that revenues are not keeping up with spending in the state of Minnesota, we've asked a lot of our college campuses, both in the University of Minnesota system and in the MinSCU system, to restructure, to look at more efficient ways of doing things, and our campuses are doing that. They're doing a very good job of that, and I compliment them for doing that. And what I'm doing is I'm asking for administration to also take part in those restructuring of costs and then pass those savings along to our local campuses. So again, it's a very straightforward bill. It's got bipartisan support, and I'd be open to any questions.
Well, Senator Miller, if you might, there are a couple of folks who would like to testify on that. Would you prefer that we take questions from the committee first or have those folks testify and then?
I think we can might as well bring up the testifiers. I think that's and Madam Chair, one more thing. I did have some conversations with the folks from the University of Minnesota about changing some of the wording, and I think we'll just keep it the way it is for now, and then we'll have that discussion at a later time if that's okay with those folks. So we're just going to concentrate on the proposal that's in front of us.
I would ask that Don Larson join us at the table. I understand he is. Mr. Larson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Fischbach and committee members, and thank you, Senator Miller, for bringing this topic forward. My remarks are going to be fairly brief. I want to, first of all, thank Senator Miller for his acknowledgement of the efforts that are being made on our campuses already. As you're aware, we've been going through significant cuts in faculty and staff at the seven state universities. And I guess for the record, I should state I am Don Larson, president of the Interfaculty Organization, and we are the collective bargaining representative for the seven state university faculty associations. As I was saying, as Senator Miller acknowledged, we've been going through significant downsizing already, a process that on some campuses started as long ago as 2 years, that we're in the middle of on several others already. And I do want to acknowledge that the Chancellor has made budgets cuts that would meet the pending budget deficit a priority in his final year, that we have seen some cuts of magnitude in the chancellor's office. But at the same time, the IFO does still support a line item for the chancellor's office in the Minsky budget. We think that this is simply a way of verifying what the chancellor's office and the board of trustees have already declared, that instructional costs should have the priority for the system, and it's just a way of making sure of that in these uncertain times. And I can stand for any questions if you have any.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? For Mr. Larson? Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, and to the witness, and I'm not sure, maybe this was a question for Senator Miller, but I can understand what a central office is, I think, but what is a shared service unit? Shared services unit, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Is
Mr.
that
Larson.
Part of the central office?
Okay.
Mr. Larson.
I know Vice Chancellor King is here, and she'll probably speak to that as well in a while. But as I understand it, it refers to a number of services that are in ways of coordinating operations of the system. Maybe the most obvious one would be in terms of certain aspects of instructional technology, like the learning system that all of our campuses use for online learning.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Larson.
Thank you for your time.
Just for the record, a quorum is present. And we also have Laura King, who has to testify. Thank you, Ms. King.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. And Senator Miller, thank you for the opportunity to speak on the subject of the bill that's before you. I will, Senator Senjum, to your question, particularly speak to shared services. But before I do, let me just give a little background about the path that the Chancellor's Office has been on these last several years. Since 2009, we have reduced the Chancellor's Office budget by 22%. Just from 10 to 11, we reduced the budget by nearly $4 million. The Chancellor has adopted a program for 12 so that when his successor takes office, based on the assumptions we've made about what you're facing, we will have a balanced budget, and that amounts to about a 40-position reduction, as well as another $4 million in our operating budget in 12. So we have been very proactive. The board has been a very strong steward of the whole budget. We've been planning across the system, as Mr. Larson mentioned. We've been planning across the system for some time now. I think it's worth noting that the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities as a system spends in the bottom five in the country on administrative costs. We are, by some measures, sort of dangerously lean on administration. Our total spending on administration is about 2% of our total budget. So this is an area that's already been worked very aggressively by the board, by the presidents, and it's made possible in part, Senator Senjum, by the creation of a shared services group. We have a very robust technology platform that we run out of the Chancellor's office that's used by all of the campuses. And by some estimations, we judge that that would be several hundred million dollars to replace if we replace it on a per-campus basis. We also provide shared legal services, shared capital project management services, shared assistance through the foundation office. We have worked with the presidents to identify what services they'd like us to offer on a collective basis at a volume discount, and then we make those services available. So we appreciate the spirit of the bill. We would just observe that we're already very tuned in to the concern that has been expressed here and in other venues about administrative spending. We think we have a very good record on that score. And we also would note that about 96% of the employees system-wide are in collective bargaining agreements. Only 4% of our employees are administrators and managers system-wide. So it's not that we have thousands of people sitting in a building somewhere making administrator salaries. Very few of our employees are administrators. Most of them are MAPE and faculty and MMA, AFSCME, and middle management. So while we appreciate the spirit of the bill, it's difficult for us to respond to it because we don't have the whole picture. Until your budget work is done, we won't know quite what target we're aiming for. But be assured that the chancellor is committed to driving as many dollars to the classroom as possible while running a system that can withstand the pressures of today. Thank you.
Questions from the committee? Senator Saxon.
This isn't for Ms. King, this is for Senator Miller. Senator Miller, excuse me.
Well, quickly, are there any questions for Ms. King from the committee? Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. King, remind us, I think I know, but I'm not sure, how are the college and the university presidents paid?
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, the number that's of interest in Senator Miller's bill includes the president's salaries. We have the president's salaries in our chancellor's office budget. So that's one of the difficulties with this kind of a bill. We can't cut presidential salaries, so we'd have to go somewhere else to make the arithmetic work. And that leads us to all kinds of choices that we wouldn't go to first.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
And Ms. King, then the college campuses do not pay for the president's salary? There's not a chargeback there or anything?
Ms. King.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, the college campuses do not pay the president's salaries. We pay those out of the central office. At the end of the year, as we're closing the books, we put the cost in the campus budget so that when they do their national reporting, they report a presidential salary cost. But it's paid for out of St. Paul.
Further questions, Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What happens if you cut half the legal department in the central office and you start telling the campuses, sorry, we can't review that contract for you, we don't have the staff to do it?
Ms. King.
Madam Chair and Senator Latz, it's our view that our legal costs would go up exponentially as an overall system. Because a couple of things would happen. There'd be an increased burden on the Attorney General's office, which is not staffed for it. We'd have to have some vehicle for delegation to outside counsel, which would be a multiple more expensive than inside counsel. We would have a decline in the search of legal advice and bad consequences as a result. So it's our view that our costs would go up by a multiple. The system's cost would go up by a multiple. The cost wouldn't happen in St. Paul. It would happen at the campus.
Senator Latz.
So even though this bill says that you can't allocate any additional costs down to the campuses, in fact, the campuses would be forced, if, for example, they wanted to have a vendor contract reviewed, they'd be forced to find the costs out of their own budget.
Madam Chair and Senator Latz, that's exactly right.
Ms. King. I believe Senator
Madam
Miller
Chair.
Wanted to add something. Senator Miller?
Yes, Madam Chair and members, let me just make it clear that this bill does not make any reductions in any specific area. We're not saying that we're going to cut the legal department. This is simply saying that we want the Board of Trustees to take a look, a big picture look at the Minscu central office and reduce the central office cost by 10%. But we're not saying specifically legal, or we're not specifically targeting any amounts.
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, Ms. King, give me three other divisions or departments or units within the central office separate from, say, the legal department that would be, since you can't take this out of president's salaries or the chancellor's salary, that would be affected.
Ms. King.
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, we have a group that does financial reporting. for all of the schools. We hire external auditors, and we coordinate that work through a group in St. Paul. If that group didn't exist, I'm not sure how we would do financial reporting, frankly, because someone has to consolidate. We have a group that does project management for all of our capital projects, which you're familiar with. You've met the fellow that runs that group. He's got a group of four or five people that help the campuses contract with the constructors, contract with the designers. If that group didn't exist, all that work would happen on the campus, and it would happen without any sort of central design standards or discipline around the capital program. We have a group in the budget group in finance that does all of the work for you, that does all the reporting for your office, all of the coordination with your office. If that group weren't in place, then your staff would have to call 32 campuses to get information about what was your tuition rate last year, or what's your enrollment forecast, et cetera.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Let me just make this clear. Again, financial reporting, I'm fairly positive that every, and maybe you can confirm this, that every campus has a CFO and accounting department. Project management, the campuses have facility people. Finance, again, the CFO, the accounting department. So there is some duplication between the our local campuses and the central office, and I just want to make that clear as well.
Madam Chair, if I'm not sure if Ms. you'd King. Like me to respond to that or not. I'm quite sure what the format is here, but we are not of the view, Senator Miller, that it's duplication. We're of the view that the work that gets done at the enterprise level is work that doesn't get done anywhere else. Nobody produces system-wide financial statements, and that's the kind of work I'm talking about. So it is different work. We just finished, as you all know, we asked the legislative auditor to look at our office last year, and they did a very extensive examination. They surveyed all the campuses. They surveyed the presidents, and we took their report very seriously and worked to change the organization to respond to those recommendations. So we think we're in tune with what the campuses want, and we think there are some things when you're a $2 billion organization that have to get done, and that's the work that goes on in St. Paul.
To that point, Senator Pappas, or should I go back to Senator Latz?
Oh, Senator Latz.
Senator Latz.
Ms. King, what proportion of the central office or shared services budget is made up of the chancellor's salary and the president's salaries?
Madam Chair and Senator Latz, I would put that number at less than 25%, maybe closer to 20%.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Latz.
So then this mandate just – it doesn't just ask the Board of Trustees to look at the issue. It's a mandate to reduce the budget. Would apply to 80%, not 100%, because you couldn't reduce the contractual salaries. So really you've already narrowed it down to 80%. And of that, you could either eliminate departments or eliminate some system-wide work, or the costs get, in fact, pushed back onto the campuses, even if it's not allowed to be done formally, or some of the work doesn't get done. And the first vendor contract that is missing a sentence that it needs to have that results in an extra $1 million in costs wipes out part of your savings right there, because the chancellor's office has the broad expertise. I mean, we've had testimony in this committee over the years that the facilities folks in the chancellor's office are the ones that are the most expert in a lot of these building design stuff. You know, they got janitors at the local level, and they got people that can help manage the buildings at the local level. But in terms of the bigger questions, the broader system-wide questions, only a central office can maintain that level of expertise on an ongoing basis. Ms. King, do you think I'm off base with my comments, or do you think they're essentially what would have to happen?
Madam Chair and Senator Latz,
Ms. King.
One of the things that we've designed ourselves for
is to respond to very different staffing levels on the campuses. We have, at the larger universities, for instance, we have folks whose full-time job is to do capital project planning and construction administration. But at some of the two-year schools that don't have a capital project but once every 10 years, they don't have anybody on their staff, nor would we expect them to, because that person would have nothing to do 9 years out of 10. So part of our staffing challenge is to staff the whole thing efficiently. And that means that we have some capacity at the chancellor's office that doesn't exist uniformly across the campuses, and we make that capacity available. So I think you're exactly right. Every campus has a physical plant manager, somebody that worries about the boilers and the air conditioners and the security systems. But every campus does not have someone trained to be a construction program administrator.
Senator Miller, I believe you wanted to respond.
Yes, Madam Chair and members, and Senator Letts, I would agree that a lot of the two-year campuses probably don't have some of those folks. And again, I just want to remind members, we're not talking about abolishing or getting rid of the Minsky Central Office. We're talking about a 10% reduction in spending. But to your point, I can speak for at least Winona State University. They have many more professionals than just janitors in their facilities. I believe that's the word you used was janitors. We have folks that they've been doing a lot of building on campus, and there's been folks that have been overseeing that and been very involved in that. So I respectfully disagree with your comments on just our campuses having janitors, because they do have facility folks.
Madam Chair.
Senator Letts.
I'm sorry. I never suggested the campuses just have janitors, so that's an inappropriate conclusion from my comments. They have professionals, too, of course. The central office has an important role to play, as Ms. King has explained. Winona State is a big campus. It would make sense for them to have more professionals full-time on staff and for that not to be done at the central office stage. But Hennepin Tech might not. All right? And if they don't have someone in the central office that has that expertise, they're either going to screw up the project or they're going to pay a consultant a whole lot more to learn about the facilities at Hennepin Tech and then figure out what to do with them.
Senator Miller.
And Madam Chair and Senator Letts, so maybe the folks, the seven, the university campuses that do have those folks, maybe they don't have to go to the central office for that expertise if they have that expertise on their local campuses. So maybe there's a savings right there for just the two-year technical colleges and community colleges. Maybe we keep that service for them, but not for the four-year universities. Could be a savings right there.
Madam Chair, I would expect they
Senator
already
Letts.
Do. I would expect they already do. They rely a lot less on the central office than the campuses that don't have the staff on hand.
Senator Miller.
Madam Chair, I would hope that they, for the financial reporting and the project management, and I understand the financial reports have in one place. Again, I'm not saying that the central office we're not abolishing the whole thing. Again, we're talking about a 10% reduction in costs in savings from last biennium to the future biennium. And again, we do have CFOs and we do have project managers and those type of folks on our local campuses. So that's why I think this conversation is good today.
If there are further questions for Ms. King, because I do have to get back to Senator Saxok, who was going to ask a question of Senator Miller. But if there's, I would like to excuse Ms. King. If
I have a question for her.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This issue of the central office has been ongoing for a number of years, you know, and so you see that Ms. King mentioned that they had done a 22% reduction in the central office. So this is a 10% on top of a reduction they've already done, laid off 40 people, et cetera, et cetera. So Ms. King, would you give us some examples of what you are no longer doing for the campuses given this past reduction? And then maybe if you had an additional reduction, what you would have to stop doing in the future. And hopefully you can give us a few examples.
Certainly, Madam
Ms. King.
Madam Chair, Senator Fischbach and Senator Pappas. The thing that comes to mind most readily is that in this last round, We eliminated the Center for Teaching and Learning, which was a professional development program for the faculty. It was very highly regarded and really well-liked in certain circles. It showed up in the survey that was done by the legislative auditor, sort of in keeping with Senator Miller's remarks. It was having sort of a mixed reaction on the campuses. Some of the campuses liked it a lot, used it a lot. Other campuses didn't use it as much. And so that program, in the course of having to identify places to cut, was eliminated. We also closed the MNSAT office, which you may be familiar with. They used to handle the broadcasting contract with this building and was started at St. Paul College some 20 so years ago. We've now closed that and have mothballed all the equipment. We eliminated some of the services out of the administrative divisions, both in the finance division, the HR division. We just stopped providing some services to the campuses, and they can choose to replace those or not. As we look at additional reductions, I'll tell you my great anxiety here is that that we've got a good momentum going on our technology platform. You were helpful to us. The House and Senate both were helpful to us some years ago. We're getting very good reviews from the students. We're on the cusp of launching some new functionality that's very attractive. It's got great, great benefit for the campuses from an operational standpoint. They don't have to staff a financial aid window. They don't have to staff a registration window because we're moving it to an online environment. And I'm very nervous about that because if we can't keep up the technology investment, the costs are going to pop up on the campus overnight, and they're going to have great criticism from the students about student services. That's fully half of the budget in the chancellor's office is technology. We run the entire technology platform for the whole system to what I think is very great benefit, and that's where we're going to have to go next with additional reductions. The other anxiety I have is that we have sort of basic internal control and legal compliance obligations. And as we continue to cut the staff responsible for that work, whether it's labor contracts or managing grievances or dealing with bank relationships or the payroll process, all of those things have requirements, and that's where we'll go next. And it may pop up for you in a couple of years in audit findings or in legal claims.
Seems as though there's no questions specifically for you, Ms. King. So thank you very much.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you, Senator.
You bet. Thank you.
And then we will go to Senator Saxhog. You have been very patient. Well, thank you.
Thank you,
so
Madam
much,
Chair. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. There was sense to the
you
order.
You have a good memory, Madam Chair. Thank you. So thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Miller, I was just wondering how you happened to come up with a 10% cut.
Senator Miller.
Madam Chair, Senator Saxhog, I've been looking over the past probably 4 or 5 weeks, I've been looking at the budget, both the overall general fund budget for our state and for higher ed, and I thought that 10% was a number that wasn't overreaching. The MNSCU central office, and again, I complimented the local campuses for being proactive and doing some restructuring, and I'd also like to compliment the MNSCU central office on doing that. They have done some of that. A lot of those savings we'll see in the next biennium. So those savings would actually, they wouldn't be in addition to this number, they would be included in this number. So the reason I came up with 10% is I didn't think it was too far-reaching, and I thought it was a number that that we could get. And when the central office was here a few weeks ago and they testified in front of us, they said they made that are in the process of making a reduction of 4 to 5%. And my specific question was, did that 4 to 5% reduction in spending have any impact on our students? And the answer was no. So my goal is to get to a number where we can downsize the central office and still not have a negative impact on our local campuses and our students.
Senator Sanders.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Miller, so and after you heard from Ms. King that indeed the administration costs for Minsky, we're in the bottom 5% of the whole United States. I mean, that has that affected your thinking? Did did you take that in consideration when you made the 10% recommendation?
Yep, and,
Senator Miller.
Madam Chair, Senator Saxog, I have the 2010 auditor's report in front of me, and I just want to read a couple things here. This is right out of the report. In recent years, system office expenditures grew faster than other Minsky expenditures. Between fiscal years 2002-2009, Minsky's total expenditures grew 34% compared with 52% increase in the system office. Then I also had another system office staffing and expenditures grew in recent years. During this time, during the time of 2002 and 2009, system office spending grew from 4.1% to total Minsky spending to 4.6%. And then between 2002 and 2009, the number of full-time equivalent staff in the central office, not including the president's, grew from 318 to 385. So, again, I want to go back. I understand the idea of the central office, and I don't necessarily disagree with a central office. But in my opinion, and the reason for this legislation is I think it's growing at a faster rate than what's growing on our local campuses. And I think the idea is we need to concentrate on our local campuses and pass these savings along to them and ultimately to the students. Another interesting fact that I have, members, fiscal year 2011, college and university allocations in the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Number one is St. Cloud State with roughly $49 million. Number two is the system office with just under $45 billion. Number three is Mankato, $43 billion. Winona State is four. Moorhead, number five. So the Minsky central office is second in appropriations, and they have zero students on their campuses. The students are on the campuses. They're at St. Cloud, Mankato, Winona State, Moorhead, Bemidji, throughout the state.
Senator Miller, thank you, Madam Chair. You just kind of—it kind of sounds like you're going after the biggest pot you can find. I mean, that's kind of the impression I'm getting here,
Madam Chair.
I mean, we don't know the whole idea here of central office is efficiency. So if that's the case, we might expect them to increase. I'm just, 10% just seems kind of an arbitrary number. I'd feel better if it was 11.3 I'm kind of wondering because, you know, after all, that's kind of a, 10% is kind of a magic number. If we took the whole state budget and took off 10%, there'd be our, you could take, that would balance the budget, wouldn't it?
Senator Miller.
Madam Chair, Senator Saxog, I agree with you on both counts. If we took the 10% off the whole state budget, we probably would. And again, I'm not going after the biggest pot. I'm going after this is the Senate Higher Ed Committee. I'm not going after anyone. Our local campuses are going to be taking reductions as well. And all I'm saying is the central office should take a proportionate reduction as our campuses. And many of our local campuses will see 15 or 20% reduction. So I would be more than happy if you're going to offer an amendment for 11.3%. I'd be more than happy to take that.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Miller, the real problem here, or the real question I have is again, back to my initial five words out of my mouth, how'd you come up with 10%? I mean, whether it's 11.3 or 6, I'm just trying to figure out where that number came from. Does that fit into some piece of the total budget that's going to be prepared by the majority, or is this just yours, or what?
Madam Chair.
Senator Miller.
Senator Saxog. Again, that number came from the central office told us they're making 4 to 5% reductions, again, with no impact on the students. With the conversations I've had with folks and the research I've done, I thought 10% was a number that we could reach and not have a negative impact on our students. And the other reason was to get the conversation going. I mean, I think this has been a very healthy conversation today, and I thank you, Madam Chair, and the members for this conversation. I think this is an important topic that we need to consider. We don't have the targets yet. We don't have the appropriations. So that 10% right now is just the number that I came up with my, you know, I'm an accountant by trade, so that's the numbers I think in. And this number, when the budgets that I was doing, it worked fairly well.
Thank you.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Miller, I think the problem that I have with this approach is it really appears to be micromanaging in an area where we just don't have all the details. You know, I don't know. I think technology is very expensive, and the central office has been handling a lot of the technology. And as a faculty member, if I don't have good technology, if the system's down, if my students aren't online, you know, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, they're frustrated. If you have a smart classroom, it's not working, you can't deliver the curriculum as you plan. So I think the technology, we've really come to rely on that. And the other thing besides micromanaging and the importance of technology is just the efficiencies of scale. I mean, we've been talking the last couple of years about this whole idea of shared services, that this is a more efficient way to go. And this seems to be going now in the opposite direction and not kind of supporting that whole idea of each campus should not have to have its own entity, its own legal services, its own this, its own that. We should be able to have a shared service that would be more efficient. I think the central office probably does play a more important role for the smaller campuses that can't afford to have all those experts that the larger campuses can afford. So, I can understand the larger campuses. They want to be independent. They want to do their own thing and not have to report to the central office. And that's just a product of being part of a system. You know, maybe some of these campuses should go independent and not be part of the system anymore if it's so important to them to kind of run their own show. Of course, then they'd have to pay for their own president, and they'd have to develop their own technology and their own legal services and their own payroll, and, you know, and they wouldn't get financial aid, and, you know, they'd be a private college. So, I mean, that's certainly an option that maybe some campuses should think about it if they have such a hard time being part of a system. And then, just to change the subject here, I wanted to ask you a question about Section 2 after I've done my little tirade. And that is, it really has been a very strong tradition in Minnesota, because the university existed before the state did, to not mandate that the university does anything but to request. So I would, at the appropriate time, I would really like to make a motion to change the shall to is requested to. And then while I still have the floor, I have one more comment before I get back to that, and that is how, for the University of Minnesota on 1.16, how is administrative services defined? And I don't know if they have a line item in their budget or – you know, have you had discussions with them about how they're going to define administrative services?
Senator Miller.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, I have most – I want to respond to all your questions, and I think I have most of them wrote down. I might miss one or two, so if I do, come back. I'm going to start from the back end first. I mentioned – I'm not sure if you were here quite yet, but I did have conversation with the University of Minnesota about specifically about that language that you mentioned. And what we came up with or what I mentioned is we're just going to keep this how it is for today, and we're going to continue that discussion. That's probably a discussion that might take a little bit longer than the rest of today from what I've heard from council. Let's see, administration, I had that conversation actually just before the hearing today. Some folks from the University of Minnesota stopped in, and you're right, there's not a – administration can be classified as many different ways. So we're working through that. My main focus again was we're seeing departments are getting they're getting their department budgets reduced. Everyone across the board is getting their, whether it's in the University of Minnesota departments, their campuses, or the Minsku Central Office. And all I'm asking is for administration to take part in those reductions. Okay, so the University of Minnesota portion might be a little bit more complicated to try to find that administrative number, and we'll have to work with the Board of Regents on that. And again, because it's not like the central office where they have the Minsku central office has a central office, and that's what we are looking at in this proposal. So I agree with you. We will have to continue those conversations with the University of Minnesota on the administrative services side. Now let me try to go back here. You mentioned technology, and I agree. I think again, we're not talking about abolishing or getting rid of the central office. We're talking about simply reducing spending in the central office. Now, they have developed a technology that is on all the campuses. It's from what I understand, it's a pretty complex system, pretty complicated. There are other systems that are less expensive arguably maybe as efficient, but I'm not going to get into that argument. Again, I'm not saying that they're going to have to reduce technology or they're going to have to reduce legal services. I think from this conversation, I think from some of Senator Latz's questions too, I think this is a good discussion because a lot of our campuses might have some of those services where they don't need the central office to perform them. So in that case, if we're doing it at the local campuses and we're doing it in the central office, in my mind, that's duplication. And you might agree with me, but that's the way I see it. So if I'm all about, I think local decisions are best made on our local campuses and not in St. Paul. So any of those decisions that can be made in an efficient and effective manner locally, I think those decisions should be. Now, you brought up a point, and it's a valid point, that a lot of our two-year community colleges and technical colleges probably rely on the central office more than our four-year universities, and I don't disagree with that point, but one thing we are starting to see is if there's a four-year and a two-year schools in the same area or the same region, we're starting to see some shared services between those two campuses. So, again, I think that's the direction we want to head. That's proactive, and again, that's saving the taxpayers money, and that's what it's all about, and it's making our higher education system in the state of Minnesota better for our students, and I think we all agree that that's what we're here to do.
Follow up on that, Senator Pattis.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Miller, something you might want to consider, which we've done in the past when we've had to do budget cuts and have been concerned about administrative costs, is just tell the systems that the cost needs to be, that the cuts need to be applied proportionately so that the cuts are not just exclusively to one segment but are proportionate. So the administration also needs to be cut. And there are administrative costs on the campus levels, too, right, that have also, you know, maybe that's another place that you could be critical of because they have grown at a higher rate on the campus level. For whatever reasons. I mean, maybe a lot of our students need more services. If you include student services and the cost of administration, if you have more students coming to college that are less prepared for college, they're not their traditional students, maybe English isn't their first language, or they didn't, you know, work hard enough in high school or get the right kind of high school background, they are requiring more counseling services. So it depends how you define administration on the campus level as well.
Senator Miller.
Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, thank you for that suggestion, and I appreciate that, and we will do that. My original idea was to make no campus would have the central office would take a proportionate or just as much as the campus that got reduced the most, but that would have been closer to a 19 or 20% reduction in the central office, and I didn't want to do that. So Because some of our campuses, some of the campuses get reduced at more, at a higher rate than other campuses because of the budget, the formula that they have.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I'm on this bill, and I want to talk a little bit about that because I think that I would not have anybody believe that I don't understand the value of a central office and the value of shared services between the campuses and the value of a system in which resources can come to a central office and then be redistributed not equivalently among the campuses from the central office, because some of the campuses may need some services and another campus not need those services. But the value of the system is that you're able to redistribute resources and change direction depending on the needs of the various campuses. I think that's one of the strengths, just as I think that's the strength of the Mayo Health System in terms of how we deal with hospitals in smaller communities versus the regional centers, and we can redistribute our assets when we need to support for a while one of the hospitals that's maybe needs a little extra. It's what we do with local government aids. So I really believe that that the central office is critically important in the capacity of it to not look at one campus and say, you know, and I don't know that Senator Miller and I agree with that completely, but I don't see that because there is legal services on Minnesota State Mankato that there shouldn't be at the central office. It ought to be there because there are other campuses that don't have the capacity to create that, and that's the value of the system. And it's the same concept as local government aids. The other is, I like the suggestion of proportional cuts. I think that the foundation of this, for me, and I think also in my conversations with Senator Miller, is the sense that as the board looks at how they deal with the cuts that they, and I think that why would you want to micromanage? Why do you get into the middle of directing that? It's because in lots of ways it's the way employees are with their employers. They need to have a voice at the table that gives some strength to the campuses in that negotiation, that they're not alone in having to take a disproportionate share of the cuts. So I think this is about offering the campuses some voice in the discussion about how the whole system deals with what it's going to be significant cuts to their budget. I'm less concerned about the 10%. I don't hear you being tied into that too tightly, Senator Miller, either, and there may be other ways to articulate that.
Senator Miller.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, I couldn't have said it better. Thank you.
Senator Miller, did you have a motion? Or Senator Pappas?
Madam Chair, I would move that on line 1.15 to delete the shall and insert is requested to.
Senator Pappas has an amendment. Senator Miller?
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, I, like I mentioned when we came in, that I'd like to keep it the way it is, but I'm certainly not opposed to the amendment, and I would support Senator Pappas's amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Pappas's motion is to on line 1.15, remove the word shall and replace it with is requested to. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
Nay.
The motion does prevail. Senator Miller, do you want to make your motion?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that. Not quite sure how to say this,
Senate
but we'll try to say it. I move that Senate File 504 is
as amended.
As amended, is turned over for
is laid over
for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
So Senator Miller has a motion.
I don't have any notes in front of me, so I apologize.
And you did a fine job.
I'm learning. Thank you.
That's right.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
Motion does prevail. Next bill we have up is Senate File 546, Senator.
Senior 55, you can join ARP.
They're really not coming.
Oh, I've been invited to ARP. No.
Isn't it 50?
No, it's 50, I think. Yeah. My son got an invitation to join ARP. He's 13. They got to clean up their building.
We do too much for them. I'm going to be 16.
Hey, I think I'll read you. Do you want me to read all this?
How many Jack? How many Jack Anders?
All right, well, I guess from one end of the table, members, one end of the table to the other. Learn as we go here. We have Senator Fischbach has Senate File 546.
And Mr. Chair, Senate File 546 is pretty simple. It just it simply modifies the age requirements for senior citizens to take classes at our public higher education institutions without having to pay full tuition fees. It changes it from the current 66 years to a lower 62. And it was raised last session. And those taking advantage of this are still required to pay any administration fee that helps recover some of the costs and any fees that may be related to the class that they're taking. And I do have with me today Mr. Kastner, who would like to testify specifically on the bill, if Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Kastner, please state your name for the record, please.
My name is Kenneth Kastner, and I'm an out-of-work senior citizen, age 64. I was laid off as a result of the bad economy. I initially collected unemployment when I realized that a 62-year-old man could find it almost impossible to find a job. I applied for and am receiving early Social Security benefits. In an attempt to better myself and further my computer knowledge, I started taking classes at St. Paul College to attain a web design certificate on the Senior Tuition Discount Program. I attended classes from the spring of 2009 through the spring of 2010 at the reduced senior rate. As you know, this is on a when space is available basis. I have 25 credits toward my web design certificates with a GPA of 4.0. In May of 2010, I received an email from my school telling me that the minimum age requirement had been changed from 62 to 66 years old. The explanation from the college is that the law was changed because the program was only designed for supplemental classes, not to attain any kind of a degree. I have since been told that it was a result of budget constraints. I don't understand. I'm only allowed to register after all other students are registered. The seat would be empty if I were not in it. By definition, the $20 plus fees was to cover the expenses of the college. Since our state does not supplement the school for my being in the seat, the school is collecting for the expenses. Where's the extra cost? From the fall of 2009 through the spring of 2010, I incurred $1,093 in expenses in school tuition and related expenses, not counting books. I believe that there were about 285 seniors statewide using the program. If I am typical, that comes to a possible revenue loss to Minscu of $300,000. I may or may not be typical, but nonetheless, it is a loss of revenue. Being that neither my wife Diane nor I are working, we have decided that paying full tuition is not affordable. I believe most seniors should be in a similar situation. I did not attend the college in the fall of 2010. I did, however, take two continuing ed online classes. It was suggested to me to apply for a FAFSA grant. I decided against that, as I could possibly take money away from a young person who needed it more than I. Please reinstate the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Katzner. Is there any questions for Mr. Katzner?
You
can
ask any questions.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'm just wondering, was it 62 before, or was it even lower?
No.
I don't know. Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, I am not positive. I believe it was, but I am not. I'm getting nods, so I believe it was. I'm correct.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, do we have a fiscal analyst in this committee? Is that what Ms. Weidman is? Sorry, I'm new to the committee, so I apologize. I'm just wondering if Mr. Kastner's, he gave a pretty good summary of his understanding of the budget implications. Can you tell us, does this have a cost to the state?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, the bill was just introduced. Or
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
we're always madams in this
just
committee.
Just want to know I'm listening.
the bill was just introduced at the end of last week. So a request was put in for fiscal note, but nothing has come back yet. I believe Minsky is working on something, though.
So
I did speak with them about it.
You know, Mr. Senator Chair, Ms. Weidman, so is there, well, you said you only have to pay
$20? $20 plus expenses and books.
Okay.
And books.
Expenses. So, all right. So we don't really know what the, we'll have to wait. Before we know what the fiscal impact of this bill is, if there is one.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, that's correct.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, to the best of my knowledge, there isn't going to be a fiscal impact to the state. And when you take a look at the language, all of the full tuition-paying students have to be accommodated. So these are empty seats that are being filled. So there may actually be a slight gain. Yes, maybe only a few dollars, but it would have been an empty seat, like Mr. Kastner said, an empty seat as compared to one that someone paid a small administrative fee for. So there may actually be a slight gain.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, as I recall, this Mr. Kastner, it really wasn't, the decision wasn't made based on any financial reasons. It was really made to, I don't know how many years we've had this on the books, but to face the reality of who is a senior citizen. And a senior citizen, although you may get a discount at the movie theater, it's really supposed to be a post-retirement program, and that a more typical retirement age is 65 or 66. So it is a post-retirement benefit. You were right with your earlier comments. It's not really considered a way for people to get additional credentialing. And I think the proper route would be for you to apply for financial aid if you qualify. And get help that way. And there's nothing, you know, I mean, I don't think you need to feel guilty about taking it away from a younger person at all. I think that's perfectly fine. There are many people who are working into their 70s now, and if you want to start a new career at your age, more power to you. But it really was designed more to be as a post-retirement enrichment.
Well, that's exactly what I'm using it for. I'm not trying to reinvent myself. I'm just trying to use it to gain an education in computers. That's basically what I'm doing. I'm not going to go out and take a job. Nobody's going to hire me. I'm 64 now.
Well,
it's hard enough for somebody who's 25 to get a job, much less somebody who's 64. So that's what happens.
Follow up.
Just one
Pence.
More comment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then you can go to community education and get computer skills there for a very low cost. It's really a matter of what is the role for our colleges and universities, and I just don't think that it's appropriate to consider a senior citizen someone at age 62. But that's my feeling, and the committee will feel differently.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I'm not mistaken, any citizen who's eligible for Social Security could start taking Social Security at age 62 with reduced benefits, so that might be a defining age for retirement.
I don't want to hear this.
We can't afford that Social Security system.
go ahead and explain that. In the middle of all this, we got a note from the system that we changed it.
Raise tuition so much there will be young students left.
Was there a fiscal reason or just for definition?
Ms. Weedman?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomassoni, I'm trying to. I can't recall what the rationale was.
I explained the rationale. Weren't you listening? I explained the rationale.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomassoni, it was a House proposal. It was not a system proposal, a Minsky, and it was never verified why. But it was thought that it was because of a situation at a particular campus area. But it's anyway. That's the story.
Ms. Wyman?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomassoni, it comes back to me now. I believe it was a specific situation where someone was basically creating another career for themselves, and I think the intent was that this was a program not where someone would develop a new career for themselves for, you know, after they retired, but just to take courses to upgrade their skills in particular areas. And it was a house provision.
Well, is there a way to grandfather people in who are...
Senator Tomassoni?
Such as this person.
Oh, that started. It started under one.
Mr. Chair?
Can't do that.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion on Senate File 546 to pass it to the floor.
Okay, we have a motion on Senate File 5. Senator Latz?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if we're at the point of considering a motion to actually pass it and not lay it over for any reason, I think we do need to wait for any formal fiscal analysis, unless the practice in this committee is going to be to pass bills that may have a budgetary impact without waiting to find out what it might be.
Senator Sharon?
Yes, thank you. Just for my orientation, I need to understand what the implications of this is to the campuses, besides the fact that it's an empty seat, Senator Fishbach. And maybe I need counsel to answer this, but are these for credit, and does it work towards a degree, a recognized degree? Does it require the faculty to engage the student in the same testing and work product and oversight and, you know, correcting of papers as a student that's paying full tuition? What is the implications of adding this person to the classroom besides that it's an empty seat that you're getting $20 for? And why $20? Where do we come up with $20?
It's $20 plus expenses.
Plus expenses,
plus
yeah.
Plus expenses.
But books. And stethoscopes, if you're going to be under feet.
I have Mr. Fuller, I think, who wants might have a little description here.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sheard, I can read. It's about 10 lines if you want me to read. It's fairly dense about what the consequence. The answer to your question is yes, you can use those credits, and yes, it can be for credit. There's about 10 lines that describe the program. Would you like me to read them to you?
Well, you know, maybe you want. Yes. I guess there are members who do. And then the second part of my question is: does the $20 cover the costs that the campuses incur in order to meet whatever those objectives are? But yes, please, would you read those, if you don't mind, Chairman?
Mr. Chair, members, it's 135A.52, Subdivision 1, fees and tuitions, except for an administrative fee established by the governing board at a level to recover costs. To be collected only when a course is taken for credit, a senior citizen who is a legal resident of Minnesota is entitled, without payment of tuition or activity fees, to attend courses offered for credit, audit any courses offered for credit, or enroll in any non-credit courses in any state-supported institution of higher education, later on defined to be MinSCU and the U, in Minnesota, when space is available after all tuition paying students have been accommodated. A senior citizen enrolled under this section must pay any materials, personal property, or service charge for the course. In addition, a senior citizen who is enrolled in the course for credit must pay an administrative fee in an amount established by the governing board of the institution to recover costs. There shall be no administrative fee charge to a senior citizen auditing a course. Later on, there's a provision that says if it's specifically defined adult or a senior course, that's not included. So if it's a course only for seniors, this section doesn't apply.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder, Senator Fischbach, if, how you would feel about just adding the words is retired and just make it clear that this would apply to someone who is age 62,
A senior citizen,
but also is retired. And that would at least put the intention in place that we're talking about, that it's someone who is not intending to do this just to have a second career.
Mr. Chair, I would rather not. I think the 62 is the way I'd like to go with the bill. And actually, I will modify my motion, and we can lay it over for possible inclusion or until we get the fiscal note back.
Okay.
If that maybe makes people feel better about it. Because this shouldn't have, I mean, this is not going to, we're not going to see a fiscal note on this.
Okay. Senator Fischbach moves that Senate file 546 be laid over?
Laid over for possible
laid
inclusion.
Over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. And, Mr. Chair, I don't believe there is any other business in front of the committee, so if you'd like to adjourn us until Wednesday.
Okay. With no other business, I move that we adjourn until Wednesday at 3 p.m.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.